Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we are in the stew today, the kitchen couch.
Here we are.
We started this podcast because we knew one day we would want to record our conversations on this kitchen couch. Mm-hmm. We've had so many good ones, right? And we knew that you guys were having good conversations too, not just about our favorite kid products, like what makes our lives easier as moms, but also what makes our mama bears engage, how we live our lives to be more compassionate, to be more joyful. And we wanted to record those conversations essentially. And we also wanted to interview women who we have admired from afar or who have been our friends, who we just think are the coolest and who we think are spreading those beams of love and compassion. So that's what we get to do on Mondays. We get to talk to these women and give them to you to be inspired, to recognize that inside all of us is that mama bear just waiting, just ripe for action.
That's right. And on Wednesdays, we record further conversations from the couch. But today we have a great guest.
We do.
Have Aubrey Sampson. She is like so many of us. She is someone who is very real, very just honest and vulnerable. She has written a book called Overcomer, Breaking Down the Walls of Shame and Rebuilding Your Soul. And we, I think, are just going to give you a really great conversation with Aubrey today. She requires little introduction.
I know she does, but just as an intro, we talk about shame. Mm-hmm. We talk about the things that as women, you know, she has a very unique thing that has kind of brought shame cycles upon her. But there were like the larger issues that work in all of us as women to put us in these shame cycles, right? And we get vulnerable. We get real.
Yeah, I appreciate her story so much and just her willingness to share what she knows. She's really informed. She's not only felt these things, but she's walked through the process of overcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And offers a lot of really practical advice for those of us who struggle with this, you know, shame cycle, with these feelings of not being enough. And she offers research and, you know, just a really, she's just a great voice in this area.
Yeah. And I will never cease to be amazed at, we didn't know her before this, mm-hmm. right? She came recommended to us and like right away, we just got all the walls were down. Mm-hmm. We just went for it, mm-hmm. you know, and like the power of the community of women when we trust each other, when we, you know, come from a place of respect, it's insane.
It's true. I love that too. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think it does take a certain openness mm-hmm. and just the belief that we are for good.
Yeah.
You know, we trusted that Aubrey was going to bring her best mm-hmm. self, and that her best self was one that didn't hold back, you know,
yeah.
who she was and her respect for those around her. And I think she trusted us as well. And I love that when women can come together and not be fearful of gossip that
exactly.
might come later
yeah.
or, you know, any sort of competition or
yes.
things of that nature. It's great when you can arrive to a conversation with just the best intentions and just that trust in the other person that
yes.
they have the best intentions
yes.
too.
You know, you're going to get so many good things out of this conversation, listeners, but, you know, let that be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like find a safe space like that. Find a place where you can arrive with just your walls down and
yeah.
your heart open. And yeah, good things come from it. Just like this conversation with Aubrey.
Let's get into it.
Aubrey Sampson is like so many of us. She's a woman who from a very early age has been consumed with shame. On today's podcast, we speak to Aubrey, who is a wife, a boy mom with three sons, a speaker, and an author of the book Overcomer, Breaking Down the Walls of Shame and Rebuilding Your Soul, about shame and how we do the hard but essential work of rebuilding our souls. So Aubrey, we are so excited to welcome you onto the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we, Leslie and I both got the opportunity to read the book. So we've been really looking forward to talking with you today. And we really feel like we just have so much to talk about. So let's jump right in. Of course, your book has some stuff before what I'm about to talk about here. But one of the first things you talk about in the book, Overcomer, is just something that happened when you were quite young on the bus. We normally start by asking our guests about their childhood anyway, so this kind of feels like a good place to start with you too. Tell us about where you grew up, what your childhood was like, and how childhood really kind of ended for you on that bus ride.
Yeah, I kind of jump in with a pretty intense story in Overcomer, but I grew up in Oklahoma City. In a small town there, had a great family, mom, dad, and a little sister. But middle school was kind of, you know, tumultuous years, like for most of us. Middle school for me was when all the girls were teasing their bangs up to the clouds, and I did that. I wore purple and pink braces, and I wore a lot of denim. So I looked really good in middle school, as you can imagine.
That sounds like me. Yeah.
Right? Exactly. I still have a jean purse with all kinds of buttons all over it that I bring around. It's pretty cool. But my parents made me ride the bus in middle school. That was the only thing that was not cool about me, was I had to ride the bus. But our bus system in my little Oklahoma City town was kind of funny because we bused high schoolers along with middle schoolers. So you've got an age range of, you know, 12-year-olds up to 18-year-olds, which I think is a terrible, unhealthy choice. But, you know, it is what it is back in the day. And, you know, so I'm a 13-year-old girl, and there are these older boys at the back of the bus, and I can just remember, you know, being in love with them and like daydreaming about them and wanting to have their attention. And one day, two of these boys actually invited me to sit at the back of the bus with them. And, you know, as a middle schooler, I felt like the fate of my existence was going to change forever. Like, no one I wasn't this awkward junior high. I was like the cool girl at the back of the bus with the older boys. But the story kind of turns sour because one day, I was on the bus, and for some reason the bus was really empty that day. I'm not totally sure why, but these boys that, you know, I just had a major crush on, they counted 1, 2, 3, and one of them grabbed me by the shoulders and held me down while the other sexually assaulted me. And, you know, when we got to my stop, they let me go like nothing had happened, and I can remember sort of dusting myself off, walking off the bus and kind of looking at the bus driver. Did you see what happened? Why didn't you stop that? I don't know if he saw. I'm assuming he didn't. But I got off the bus, and I can remember really specifically standing in front of my mom and dad's house in the yard and thinking, you know, I should run in and I should tell mom and dad because they'll know what to do. They'll know how to take care of this. And maybe I won't have to ride the bus anymore. But I can also remember really specifically this voice, really a voice of shame, began to speak to me. Aubrey, you liked these boys. You know, Aubrey, you had crushes on them. Aubrey, you flirted with them. And I never told anybody what happened. Actually, not for another 20 years, because I really believe the oldest lie, frankly, in the book, that what happened was my fault. And so that was sort of one of my real first recollections of experiencing that feeling of shame.
You're obviously a mom of boys, and I have one daughter. And sometimes these stories keep me up at night a little bit, you know, picturing my daughter who's 10.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, this in no way, the only people to blame in this entire story are those boys, right? But like, is there anything that you now as a parent could have said, could have done differently as your parents to kind of pull that out of you, you know, to been a voice that was louder than the shame? I'm only asking as a mom,
I know. Yeah. You know, I think my parents and I have actually talked about this, you know, with the book coming out, I wanted to have a long conversation with them because I didn't want to make them feel like they had done something wrong.
Right.
But I do think at the end of the day, one of the things that we talked about is how just lines of communication could have been open from a really early age about scary things, mm-hmm. about sexual things. And my parents were kind of that generation who didn't really talk to us kids about sex and about right. Abuse and about bullies. And we just didn't really have that conversation. And so I don't know that it would have prevented what happened, but I do think had there maybe just been kind of a culture of safe disclosure in my family, mm-hmm. I would have felt comfortable saying, this really bad thing happened. And then my mom and dad would have responded. And I think they regret that, you know, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, they can't read my mind. They don't know what happened. They thought mm-hmm. everything was going okay. But I am thankful that, you know, my kids come home and they say, oh, we had a conference at school today about bullies or about standing up for, you know, people who are being hurt. And I'm thankful, like, finally that vocabulary and that language is being mm-hmm. talked about more openly culturally.
Yeah, you're
it's
so
scary,
right.
isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I've got three boys and I'm like, you better watch how you treat women.
right.
Girls, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel more pressure being a mom of four boys, for sure. How do I get them so they're not those boys, right?
Yes.
To be sure. And I agree with you. And you even said it earlier, you know, it's a different world that we are parenting in than our parents. They had no idea that there was just a culture of shame, a culture of secrecy then that isn't there now. Now we're just kind of more like woke. We know what we know. And so we try to do better. And so, I think you're so right. This isn't, you know, your parents' fault by any stretch, but I did just want to, for our listeners who, you know, who would be thinking that like, okay, well, how do I make sure that, you know, that I know, I think you gave a really good answer there. And in your book, you actually talk about how that moment on the bus really sent you down a spiral where you became a 2D version of yourself. I really loved your kind of explanation about that. So what did that, tell our listeners what that looked like for you.
Kind of the biggest difficulty after that experience, I mean, beyond the physical ramifications of it, was the emotional aftermath, right? Because like I said, I liked them, I flirted with them, and so I thought that this was my fault. And so the interesting thing, I use the term 2D because kind of liken myself to the difference between being a photograph of myself and the real version of myself. Mm-hmm. So I was still, you know, on one level, still a really happy, bubbly teenager. Again, my parents had no idea what had happened. And part of that is at such a young age, I didn't know what sexual assault was. I didn't know that there was even that term. I didn't know really how to think about or even talk about this incident. And yet this inner emotional shift had taken place. And, you know, it was definitely a loss of self-esteem, but I define shame in the book as a feeling of not enoughness. Mm-hmm. Anytime you feel like in whole or in part, you are not enough, that's shame. And that's really what I began to feel. I think shame just began to overshadow parts of my self-esteem, parts of my identity. And because of that, I kind of transformed into a lesser version of myself. And I think a lot of women experience that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Aubrey, though your incident of sexual assault was very specific to you, it's become increasingly clear, really within the last few months even, we've learned that this is a terrifyingly real and common experience for a lot of girls and women. I guess my question is, what is it about sexual assault specifically that results in shame on the part of the victim? So we've recorded a podcast with a woman who works with victims of sexual assault, and she said that it never happens for victims of robbery or something else where the victim feels the shame. But here it's common that experience for victims of sexual assault that they blame themselves and then, you know, jump onto this kind of cycle of shame.
Yeah, it's so complicated. It's so terrible. It's so complicated. You know, I've said this a number of times. I think there's a few complicated reasons for this. Part of it is that, just like the lie, I believe so many victims of sexual assault or, you know, repeated sexual abuse, you believe the lie, it's your fault. That somehow you gave the message that it was okay, or that you wanted this, or that you liked the attention. And I think, you know, sexual assault specifically, it's so painful, right? Because it happens to our body. It happens to our skin. It happens to our being, where if someone robs our house, we do feel victimized and we feel scared and we feel angry. But if someone robs your body, you end up feeling, you know, marred and ugly and changed somehow. Mm-hmm. I feel like other assaults are incidents, but sexual assault can become an identity. It can become that shame identity so quickly. And I think the other thing is, you know, you just said this, this is such a terrifyingly common experience for girls. Statistics say 1 in 4 women before the age of 18 are victims of attempted or completed sexual assault. And I have sat in so many rooms where the statistic is honestly more like 1 in 2. And so I think the reality is there are so many women walking around with this little girl inside of them who had something just precious and valuable stolen from her. And that little girl that's inside, she still needs healing and she still needs honor. And that's not easy work to do.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking and kind of terrifying. You are definitely, you're a person of faith. You're a Christian. How does that complicate or ease the pain, or a combination of both as you've journeyed through this?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think for me, my experience of faith and shame, the negative, I'll say first, and then the positive. I think the negative experience, and this probably depends on your faith background and upbringing, but at least for me, growing up in Christian culture, there was so much pressure to sort of operate above reproach and to live this holy life and to be sort of quote unquote sexually pure. And so for me, I kind of felt like if I wasn't shaming myself for the things in my past, then I was in danger of becoming prideful, you know, and it became this vicious cycle. And there's so much pressure for women in general, but I think especially for an older generation of Christian women, to be quiet and to be small. We experience so much shame in our Christian culture with that pressure that sometimes we don't even recognize we're experiencing it because it's like normal. I do think the advantage of fighting against shame as a Christian, two really powerful ones. One, we don't fight alone. We fight with Christian communities beside us, especially other Christian women. I think we can just be amazingly powerful advocates for one another and just supporters of one another. And then I think for me, my personal experience of faith is that I rely on the Bible and the Word of God to be the truth for me. And so I can experience shame, but I can know as a Christian that in Christ, I don't have shame.
I like in the book how you've actually pulled out some of those kind of go-to verses that when you're feeling some of these feelings, it's really, it becomes like a mantra of hope, right? I mean, these verses or whatever it is that you're able to lean on and find comfort in and find wisdom in, that has to help that process of healing.
Yeah, I think, you know, my book is based on Psalm 35, which says those who look to God are radiant, their faces are never covered in shame. And, you know, whether or not you read the Bible or believe the Bible, you can have Bible verses or you can have a mantra, like you said, lyrics from a song or some really strong quote, some truth that you remind yourself of over and over again. This is who I am. I am not this not enough person that shame says I am. I look to God and I'm radiant because He says I am.
Love that.
Another shame you talk about in your book is just kind of the shame about our appearances as women. And you talk about how you kind of advanced at a young age, like your breasts grew pretty large. And I thought it was interesting that you actually said that before you talked about the sexual assault on the bus. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if that was part of her shame cycle, was like, oh, well, I have this woman's body, you know, and I wondered if that wasn't part of that as well. But you talk about that in the book. And then you said at one point that among women over the age of 18, at least 80% are unhappy with what they see in the mirror. And I just, it's like, you know that, but to see that number, to see 80%, was just shocking. Can you tell us like where you found that number and what are the implications of that number on us as women? And then of course the girls we're trying to raise.
Isn't that a horrifying statistic?
Yeah.
I mean, you look around at your friends and you pretty much know it's true, but to see that on paper,
mm-hmm.
By the way, everything I learned from Dr. Brené Brown, who she's the leading voice on shame resilience right now in our country. She is, she's amazing, but she's the one who put that statistic out there. And that kind of rocked me to my core. But you're right about my breasts developing at an early age. I mean, I can remember walking around intentionally hunching my shoulders and kind of shrinking myself physically because that was an area of shame for me. I don't want these boobs out there, you know, which is kind of funny to think about. But as a 12, 13 year old girl, I don't want to develop before the rest of my friends develop because, you know, you don't want to be different when you're a middle schooler. But I think, you know, back to the statistic, it's so disturbing. And the repercussions of this, honestly, it's that our daughters, I mean, you both have daughters, right? Or is it just you, Tess, who has daughters? You both have daughters.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, you can confirm this, but girls as young as 10 years old are already starting to diet. Girls who are 8 years old and younger, I have friends who tell me this about their daughters. They are already starting to refer to themselves as chubby or ugly. They have friends saying, oh, you know, you're fat, or they're starting that body comparison that happens at such an early age. And I think, you know, the sad thing is, who can blame them, right? We live in this paradigm that promotes thinness, and for older women, youthfulness as the singular standard of beauty. And so these young girls and their moms like us, we are up against this ever increasing pressure to have it all and balance it all while looking like the end all. And it's devastating. For me, that, you know, statistic that 80% of women over the age of 18 are unhappy with what they see in the mirror, I feel like that should light a fire, honestly, in every single one of us, man and woman, to begin to do something against this shame-driven culture, especially in the beauty image area, you know, for the sake of our kids, right? For the sake of our daughters. And again, I've got my three sons. I want them to know how to see women rightly as well. And the hard thing is, there's nothing wrong with taking care of your body and wanting to feel beautiful. But it's that fine line when you start to compare yourself to other women and again, start feeling like you are not enough. That's when the shame comes in.
Totally. And as I was listening to you, I just flashed back to an experience in high school where a friend was like telling me that I had a boy's body, like a 13-year-old boy's body, basically. And I remember being like, what? Oh, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want curves. I want, you know. And so there is this sort of just underlying message across the board. Like, we're never satisfied with what God's given us, you know.
Yeah.
And that can be so hard to overcome. And I mean, I don't know, like I still look in the mirror and I'm just like, oh, this wrinkle is happening or this is happening. And I certainly don't want my worth to be tied up with my appearance, but it's hard in this culture. And I think you're exactly right. You know, we can do better. We can teach our daughters better. But first you just have to be really mindful of your own actions, the way you talk to yourself and the way you talk about your body in front of your kids. You know, what are we pointing out? What are we celebrating? What are we trying to change, and for what reason are we trying to make that change?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an extreme person. This is facts upon facts, okay? But I a few years ago had just, I mean, I've always dealt with this as well, like just this body image issue and, whatever, and then other shame stuff that was like culminating, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago or so. And I was going to this intense therapy, but it like I just could not get out of this cycle of shame over, like I said, multiple things, right? But finally, like it hit me that, just like you said, like that I'm God's beloved, that I am it, no matter where the stretch marks are, where whatever, like physically, no matter what I've done in my past, all of that kind of stuff. And so I actually got tattooed on my collarbone, I am God's beloved, so that every time I look in the mirror and I'm tempted to be negative about something, some part of my body, I see that first. And then it's like, I cannot tell you how powerful that's been of a practice for me, because I was someone who for sure fought with the mirror most of my life. And it's like that visible reminder, ooh, it has done something incredible in my life. So just like you said, I mean, I don't, tattoos aren't for everybody. Got, like Christianity, not everybody's Christian who listens to this, but like if it's a mantra that you need to put on the mirror, like sometimes we need these really practical steps to dislodging that same circle every time.
Yeah, I love that. I love the tattoo idea or taping something to your mirror. So just that visual representation. This is who I am. I am not this shame being. I am God's beloved. I think it's amazing you have that tattoo on your collarbone. What a great idea.
Yeah, it hurt really bad,
I bet it did. I have one
worth
on my
it. Probably
back and
do.
that hurt. I can't remember. I can't imagine the collarbone.
We need to do an episode on all of Tessie's tattoos and all of their meaning. I think that would be a really good one.
Probably would. You'd get a lot of listeners.
Yeah, you would. And a lot of people to just know way too much about me, probably, but it's fine. I one more stat just kind of about the appearances, because I think this is a really powerful comment. Like I've trained my daughter when we go through the supermarket aisles and she'll be like, oh, that woman's really, really beautiful, to say she is really beautiful. I bet she's even more beautiful without all of that makeup. Like this is kind of our thing we say. But you talk about in your book how 25 years ago, the top models, beauty queens, all of them weighed only 8% less than the average woman, and now they weigh 23% less. And so you go on to say, even if the average female wanted to look like that, I mean the odds that they could achieve that is just, I mean, they're so small. And it would mean, missed time with family, missed time with work, with books, with whatever you love to achieve that, if it's even physically possible in your genetic pool, right? But I just thought, how do we stop this? How do we, other than tattooing on our bodies, when we see these when we see these magazines or these things pop up on your computer, how do we remind ourselves of that and stop the cycle of shame before it starts, basically?
First of all, I love your that you're having that conversation with your daughter. That is giving her such power. That's that because you're right. That woman is beautiful on the magazine, but that's not probably what she looks like day to day, I think, knowledge is power. So for me, just reading that statistic for the first time, learning that statistic, you just reminded like, okay, the game is rigged. Like you just have to go in knowing that, right? It's ridiculous. Images of women have been tampered with, they've been highlighted, they've been airbrushed, and you have to start laughing. I think that's like a major key in fighting back against this beauty image shame is just to laugh. Not in a way that minimizes the pain of it, because like you said, it's a very painful experience to be at war with your body. But in the way that laughter kind of helps you step out of a situation and gives you some perspective, right? It's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. It's hilarious that the beauty industry is selling us, honestly, this lie that one body type who weighs 23% less than the majority of us, not to mention the fact that she's been completely, again, image tampered with, mm-hmm. that the beauty industry is telling us that she alone is the model of perfection, the standard of beauty for all of us. You have to laugh. Like, it's just so out of control. And I think the reality is we know this, but God has created such a beautiful variety of shapes and sizes and colors. And we have to start celebrating more than just this homogenous, unrealistic version of beauty. And again, I just think that you're having a conversation with your daughter. Like, let's have this conversation with our children. They don't have to completely ban magazines if they like them, but just to give them some knowledge, like, this isn't accurate.
And then I think too, like, bringing in the few magazines that might have, you know, a person of color on the cover, maybe right? I'm just giving my permission to, like, buy myself magazines because I do love them, but, you know, that's something I want to bring in. I'm going to skip Vogue, you know, a few months in a row. And then if we happen to be lucky enough to see someone other than the standard kind of supermodel cover, like, invite that into your house. Like, I think there are ways to normalize that, even though it's a much harder task if you have to really keep your eyes open for that sort of thing. But yeah, that it's so tricky. And it's something, like, I remember my mom talking to me about these things. And I guess there's always that part of me that's like, come on, guys, I thought we would have fix this by now. Like, why do we have to argue about it? for sure. So one of the themes, Aubrey, in the book that really resonated, I think, with both Tessie and I is just that shame tries to shrink us. And, you know, we're talking about this, like, literal shrinking of these women on magazine covers. And again, like, I'm not faulting those women even. I feel like as much as I would think I would need to be airbrushed on a cover of a magazine, like, you're hearing that is a message to you that, like, you're not up to par as is.
Right.
But often we feel like, what could I possibly add to this conversation? Or, you know, this voice that says, well, who's going to listen to me? It doesn't matter anyway. And I think using our voice, even when we're a little bit shaky about what we might be talking about, and even if we're in doubt that someone is messed up as who you or I might be, can really make a difference. It's one of the most revolutionary things that we can do to combat shame. And I think so often we have to just fake it until we make it. And little by little, as I saw you process in the book, you can poke holes in these lies that shame tries to tell us.
Right. I mean, it's very overwhelming to think about tackling this, you know, beauty image, body image, or even just that not enoughness of shame wherever you're experiencing it. You know, it's overwhelming to think about tackling that at large or the whole picture, but you're right. You can poke holes and you can build some shame resilience. The reality is shame wants to silence us. It does want to keep us small. It wants to keep us feeling invalidated, especially if we have dealt with shame in our past. You know, shame wants to make us feel like we're disqualified, we're unfit to make a difference. But the reality is shame cannot survive in the light. And so you're right. If you begin using your voice in small ways, I talk about this in Overcomer, just, you know, retweet a quote about overcoming shame or share pictures of beautiful women, share a quote that speaks really strongly to you or a Bible verse, you know, use your social media voice, talk to your friend and just tell them, hey, I'm experiencing some shame today. Taking those really small stands against shame throughout our days, you know, whether or not you feel like, hey, I have all the answers to this, that goes such a long way towards fighting back and towards, you know, beginning to take up the space, fill out the space that you were meant to fill out rather than letting shame just shrink you into this small disappearing self.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, that's powerful. And especially like how you said, like, it can be as simple as a tweet or, you know, a striking image of a woman who maybe doesn't fit like traditional beauty patterns or whatever. Like it has to start small until your voice becomes less shaky and until you start believing, you know, the truth that you were made for something bigger rather than the lie that you were made to be small. I love that. Like, start small, people. It doesn't, you don't have to just come out and try really, really big revolutionary acts first. Like, start small until you get your feet, and then you'll start to become bolder for sure.
Yeah. I remember this story. My sister-in-law, who I'm really close with, she has two daughters. And for Christmas one year, her daughter really wanted a Cinderella doll, which is great. I mean, she, you know, Cinderella's darling. But my sister-in-law also bought her the fairy godmother doll, you know, who's like a little more rotund and a little older. And she did it very intentionally. Like, she just wanted to make the point, yeah, Cinderella is beautiful, but so is the fairy godmother. So is this other type of beauty. And I have always been struck by that. What a powerful, teachable moment that was for this little girl, you know. And I think, you know, that's it, just little moments like that where you can fight against shame, stand up for women. And you know, I have another friend who called me one time and she just said, I'm just feeling ashamed today, I'm in the shame cycle, can we just talk on the phone for a few minutes? And I think even that, you know, those little small acts, they fight back against shame.
Yeah,
I think that's true, really, of a lot of things. I think we just get held back, kind of thinking we have to come sweeping in with this grand gesture. But it takes a lot of work to build a business or build a home or combat shame, you know, like tear down those walls. And so little efforts are not wasted, I guess. Like the things that don't seem like much, they add up and they pile on, and ultimately, they can totally change the game. I completely hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So later on in the book, you resist the urge to skip over a particular trauma that happened to you, and you boldly talk about another sexual assault that you endured by a former boss, your boss when you were just 17 years old. I hope that our listeners are catching on and really starting to understand why your book is called Overcomer. So if you don't mind, Aubrey, will you talk to us a little bit about that experience and not only that, but why you felt it was necessary to include in the book?
Yeah, this kind of goes back to the point we were just talking about with shame trying to shrink us. I really struggled with sharing the story in the book, and I write about that struggle in the book, but I kept writing and then deleting and then writing and then deleting. I went back and forth to my publisher, like, I don't know. And I've been doing overcoming shame work for a while now, okay? But it's still hard. And at the end of the day, I know that waging war against shame, it means refusing to sweep my story under the rug. And it means not allowing shame to keep me in silence anymore and to keep me in that hiding place. And so I kept some details of that story for myself, some things that just felt really sacred, that I didn't feel like, hey, the whole world needs to hear this. But I did share the general story that, yeah, when I was a 17-year-old girl, I worked at a restaurant and I had an older man, at a boss, lock me in his office and repeatedly sexually assault me. And my heart was so twisted by shame at the time. And again, I mean, he was in a power position over me, but I kept returning to his office. You know, I never thought, oh, I should quit this job. I just kept going. And again, this is another story I never told anyone about, the bus and then this boss, until I was married to my husband a few years into our marriage and I finally started talking about it. And the whole book, Overcomer, it's actually kind of the story of how God finally helped me to start talking about these two incidences, and honestly, how God helps all of us, whether we're dealing with trauma from the past or just these little daily experiences of shame that we've kind of touched on, God helps us overcome our shame, or even if you're, you know, not a person of faith, we can overcome the shame in our lives, big or small. But I felt like it was necessary to include the story because I want women to know they aren't alone. And I did not want shame to, again, keep me in that shrinking kind of position. I wanted to take up the space that God has for me.
Yeah. Honestly, you wouldn't have had to include it in the book, and you still could have had a really powerful book, I think. But, I mean, can you imagine living with that still? I mean, it's just so powerful, the story that you say now and that you also do include in that book. And I would imagine that not sharing it would have really complicated your healing process.
Yeah, I think it would have, because it would have kept me in bondage to the story. It would have kept me in bondage to that man. And honestly, it was vulnerable to put out there. I had to call my mom and dad again and have another conversation with them. Hey, this other story, by the way, is going to be in the book. But I have not once regretted it. I had somebody recently, a reader, ask me, how did you do it? I mean, don't you feel vulnerable, especially people in your life and in your community? And I was like, you know what? I actually don't. I actually feel so free and so thankful that God gave me the strength to share that story. Because I think you're right. I would have always thought, why didn't I tell the whole truth? And there's women who have these experiences, 1 in 4, you know? And so we need to know that we're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It was brave because, like you said, the shame cycle that you talked about having even a decade later after that specific experience, like that shame cycle had to have said, like, oh, but these are the repercussions. Like, maybe people know who he is. Maybe in my own community, they'll look at me differently. You know, like shame would have tried to silence that in any number of ways. And you still did. And I thought that was just, I thought it was so brave. And it undoubtedly made people who have experienced something similar just feel like, okay, I'm not alone. Okay, I can speak to this in my own community as well. I thought that was so good. And you write about how that shame still had such a strong hold on you until you got pregnant. And you called getting pregnant a shame game changer. And I just love that, especially for this podcast. I thought it was so, like, appropriate. Why did you feel that way?
Yeah, this is also part of why I love the Mama Bear podcast too. I know it sounds funny, but I think you'll get it. My mama instincts kicked in as soon as I got pregnant. And, you know, I was already doing some of this emotional overcoming shame work, but I really, something about getting pregnant, I was just determined that for this baby boy that I was bringing into the world, that I was going to do whatever it took to find freedom from the shame in my life, because I was not going to allow him to come into a world with a mom who was just overshadowed by shame. I didn't want that for him. And so that year, that 9 months, I guess, really, I began just kind of an intense process of therapy, of praying with trusted friends, of searching the Bible. What does God say about shame? That's actually when I began sort of writing this book. And it's interesting because all of the steps that I took in my journey, the emotional steps, the spiritual steps, the practical steps, all those steps that I finally began taking in a really intentional way to fight back against that feeling of not enoughness. That's what the whole book ended up being about. Mm-hmm. But really the timing was amazing because it all was sort of happening. And then my son was born, and it was kind of this beautiful picture of birthing him and birthing this new freedom in my life as well. And I'm just so thankful. I'm amazed at how God has done that in my life. And I'm so thankful for my little man who kind of spurred that process along for me.
That's such a hopeful story. I love that. And I also love how you talk about just the practicality of fighting shame, like those steps and those tips that sort of you discovered through this process, through your pregnancy. And you include a lot of these things in the book. You include questions for the reader to ask themselves. You ask readers to make lists. You give us scripts to follow. And one thing that you advise is to flip the script of negative self-talk. And I'm assuming, you know, this is something that you had to learn, but tell us kind of how that was game changing for you and just about the importance of self-talk and how we can use positive talk to sort of shoo away some of these shame demons.
Yeah, I, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but I think, again, even if you haven't been a victim of trauma, all of us know what it is to feel not good enough or not pretty enough or not thin enough or not, you know, fill in the blank enough, whatever it is, right? And so I began to realize in this journey of beginning to overcome shame that I would feel those things, right? I'm not a good enough wife, or I don't belong in this situation, I'm not worthy enough, you know, for whatever. And one day it kind of dawned on me that I was not necessarily doing this consciously, but subconsciously, I was agreeing with those statements, like just saying to myself, yeah, I'm not good enough, I'm terrible, I'm this, I'm that. And it just sort of dawned on me, like, what am I doing? I'm literally just agreeing with these lies of shame and kind of living like that's totally acceptable. And so one thing that I did, and it sounds a little funny, but I actually had to create a chart for myself. I have several of these charts, like you said, and lists in Overcomer, but I had to create, I call them shameless scripts. And I had to create something for myself that I could go to, kind of like your tattoo, that I could go to. And so whenever I was kind of doing that negative self-talk, I would be go to my chart and open it up and just speak truths over myself. And for a while, I actually did this out loud, you know? And so I think, you know, if shame was saying to me something like, you're not good enough, I would literally just say aloud, no, actually I am enough because God created me. I'm his. Or, you know, I will stop punishing myself. I am not a mistake. Kind of things like that. And so I think I try to encourage readers of Overcomer that if you find yourself repeating that shame talk, and sometimes the first step is just acknowledging that you're doing it, because like I said, I didn't even realize I was doing it. But if you find yourself repeating that shame talk, make yourself a chart or put a list in your phone, like I said. I do, like you said, I have examples all throughout the book. You can copy those, you can take pictures of those. But choose some truths. Bible verses or song lyrics or a quote, like I said, and just prepare yourself to respond with the truth whenever shame steps in with those lies. Because at the end of the day, shame is loud, but truth is always louder. And the way that we talk about ourselves, it redefines our self-image and it teaches others how to think about us. And I think we touched on this too, but, you know, by the way, going back to the younger generation, then we'll teach them to stop saying these negative things about themselves, right? They'll hear us building ourselves up, building them up, and hopefully the cycle will continue positively with them.
Go ahead, Leslie.
We love it. Oh my God, Aubrey, amazing.
I made a note so I won't forget what I was going to say. So you go ahead, Leslie.
Okay. I actually, when you were talking, I wrote down choose truth because I feel like, oh, there's the title. This is really good. So we were both making notes. but no, I was just going to say, you know, this is a little bit of a side note, but I really believe in the power of the mantra or of the prayer. For many years, I would walk around and say the Jesus prayer when I just felt like I needed a little bit of centering or I needed a little bit of a reminder. And so, you know, listeners, if you haven't tried that, I think it can be a really powerful thing. It helps you to just catch yourself, like just to be aware of the damaging thoughts that you might be having about yourself, about other people, whatever it may be. And it gives you an automatic response that you barely have to think about it, but it's enough to kind of snap you out of that, the dark road that you might be going on. The entrepreneur in me, like, I love the idea of taking a picture of your charts and your book and having them on your phone. But as you were talking to him, like, he needs to develop an app because I feel
that's brilliant.
People could go to their app and be like, okay, what's today's mantra or what, you know?
Oh, that is
so you
brilliant.
Get to work on that for us.
Okay, thank
all
you.
Right?
Dead and done. Yep.
I think, honestly, if we're being totally truthful, we've given each of our guests a business idea based on their theme.
Well, you all are so inspiring.
It's so true. So we just provide, you know, something else to spend all of your free time on. Poor Leslie and me.
Yeah, maybe you should start charging a fee. Like, we will do this for you, but this is our rate.
One ingenious business idea that you may or may not ever do. Yeah,
exactly.
I love it.
Brilliant, though. That's such a good idea.
It is. That it is. And Aubrey, when you were talking, what I wrote down was, shame is loud, but truth is louder. And I think I love that because just like we've been saying, you can't combat shame with silence. That's just impossible, right? But like if you engage the truth and if you repeat the truth, it's always going to be louder than shame, but it has to be in these really practical ways we talked about, which I think that's so, so great. And both Leslie and I, when we were reading your book, we're like, she's telling her readers to activate their mama bear. You didn't use it in that term as much as we do, you know, but it clearly resonated so powerfully with us because we always ask our listeners to, you know, to take the things that make them angry and turn that anger into kind of, Leslie says, rocket fuel for good, you know, and you do something similar in that you invite your readers to use their misery in ministry. And you talk about how to kind of transform pain into purpose. All of these just beautiful kind of images, right, of turning something dark into light. So why do you think it's important to live out your own version of kind of rising in the darkness or ministry from misery?
You know, especially for those who have spent any time battling, feeling like they're not enough, it can be so difficult to believe that you've been designed for something, you know, that you are capable of doing something in the world. Because again, I said this before, but shame makes us feel disqualified, right? That we're not fit to help the world around us. But I firmly believe the opposite is true. I really believe that if you have known shame, and if you have, or if you are in the process of finding freedom from shame, there is no one more qualified than you to point others to that freedom. And as awful as those experiences were for me as a girl, I have watched God just transform those negative experiences into areas of burdens and passions for me. Like you said, I love that rocket fuel for good. But I want to advocate for those who can't advocate for themselves. I want women of all ages to experience freedom from shame. And, you know, one thing that I do in Overcomer is other women who have experienced freedom from shame share their stories. And these women have shared stories from, you know, dealing with eating disorders to just, hey, I wasn't a good friend in this one moment. And what I think is so powerful is that these women, in their own way, are fighting against shame. They're encouraging others. They're using their own pain for a purpose. I am somebody on Facebook recently said we counter shame with encounter. And I think that's so powerful, right? As we pour ourselves out, not necessarily from our strengths, but also from our vulnerabilities, from our pain, that lets others know they aren't alone, that administers healing, that brings that light in the darkness. I think we fight shame most powerfully when we do it together. And so, yeah, I just think it's a powerful thing to fight on behalf of someone else.
Love it. I love hearing that mama bear and that encouragement of using that, like Dassie had said that, and you had said first, the ministry from misery. I mean, I just think that's such a beautiful thing. And you also include, you know, again, with a list, sort of ideas of what average readers can do to demolish shame on the behalf of others. And I think, you know, one of the things I really liked and wanted to point out, you talk about this in ways that are very practical and that are accessible to everyone. I mean, I'm kind of on the same train of thought as before, but we don't all have to go out and start our own nonprofit, or, you know, we don't all have to go out and be speakers. We are all so beautifully created in different ways and with different strengths and different forms of misery. And I love how in the book you really encourage people, you know, even if you're working in a cubicle somewhere, you know, and you're doing a job that you love but doesn't seem like it's impacting the world. Yes, you are. You still can. You can be that light to others. You can demolish shame on the behalf of others in all just endless ways.
Yeah, I like a good list, clearly, because there are a lot in
so do I.
There are a lot in my book. But I think that's it, right? Anyone who can, it's our duty, it's our honor to go bashing down the doors of shame for those who can't do it for themselves. And you don't have to leave your house, or you don't have to leave your cubicle. No, you can. I mean, if you want to go to, let's say, another country and start fighting against slavery, do it. Don't let anything hold you back. But if that's not what God is calling you to, there are so many things you can do from your home. Something I've been doing kind of recently, it's a little cheesy, but I've been calling my newly elected officials after the office is closed and leaving messages and telling them, hey, I am passionate about issues of justice. I am passionate about ending slavery across the globe. I am passionate about standing up for victims of sexual abuse. Can you please do something about it? Mm-hmm. You can tweet at your newly elected officials. You can grab friends and just pray for victims of shame around the world. You can do research. There are so many amazing organizations right now. Christine Kane has her A21 campaign. There's International Justice Mission, so many amazing organizations. You know, you can go online, find out what they're doing. Sometimes they have lists of steps you can take. And then, you know, Christmas is coming, right? We can make some informed choices when we shop for Christmas mm-hmm. gifts, organizations that promote best practices for women. I think the powerful thing is that any of us can use the gifts and the tools that are right in front of us to help care for others.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I particularly love when I don't have to get out of my pajamas, you know, like those are all things I can do right here.
Yep. You don't have to put pants on to do any of those things.
It's so good. It's so good. My mama bear is extremely lazy some days. I'm curious. Because I know what I was like before I kind of disrupted the cycle of shame and just the freedom. And I mean, this is like a totally different person, but I'm curious what it was like for you. Could you explain kind of the Aubrey who lived with a tremendous amount of shame compared to Aubrey, the overcomer?
Yeah, that's such a good question. This is obviously a long, arduous process, and I think in a lot of ways, half the battle of fighting against shame is being willing to continue battling against it, even if it's every single day. And like we've been talking about, poking holes in shame and building up a strong shame resilience, we can do it. I think for me, I like to tell a story that's actually in Overcomer, but you know, I'm from Chicago. You're from Michigan and Iowa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you probably will relate to this. We get these nasty winters in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you know, the snow is beautiful and it's magical, but then it gets gross. And it really quickly turns into just muddy slush, and Ugh. Everything is covered in sludge, right? Everything is wet. Your socks get wet. There's nothing cute about it, right? And you know this, anytime there's a fresh snowfall, all of this mud, all of this slush, it becomes covered with this layer of sparkly, clean snow. And there was this night a few years ago I write about this in Overcomer, but one of my sons woke me up really early in the morning, like the sun had just risen. And he was like, Mom, you have to come outside. You have to come outside. There's diamonds in the snow. And, you know, the sun was hitting it just right, that it was sparkling. And I think for me, sorry, I get emotional when I talk about it, but letting go of the shame from my past, feeling like I was broken and marred and used and unworthy, letting go of that was like waking up in the middle of the night to discover that something new had finally arrived in the darkness. And, you know, I believe this lie that I would never be more than this sort of messy, sludge-covered woman. But I truly, wholeheartedly believe for myself and for every woman out there that all things can be made beautiful. Even the ugliest things, even the darkest things, they can sparkle with beauty. And so for me to overcome shame, to be this overcomer, it wasn't that I was necessarily doing anything different in my life, but suddenly I felt freedom to be me, right? To be the wife I've always wanted to be the mom I've always wanted to be the speaker and the writer and the advocate that I've always wanted to be. And, you know, the journey's hard, but the journey is so worth it. And I think any woman or man struggling with shame, you are worth it. You are valuable. So begin this process of fighting back.
Oh, truer words. Yeah, I love that.
So good. So yeah. Good. Like diamonds, honestly. That's such a great story, a great anecdote.
It is. And a great comparison, because we can all visually see that in our head. Mm-hmm. And Aubrey, before we actually turned on the podcast, you and I were talking a little bit, and you said, we don't know how the country and the church works to change. We were talking specifically about kind of the shame around sexual assault. Leslie and I have done a podcast on this when kind of the tapes of Donald Trump were shown, you know, on the bus. We did a whole podcast on this. But do you have any insight as someone who, you know, as a victim of this, as someone who engages her mama bear to help other women like this, like how do we, and then someone raising boys who are by large, you know, men are the biggest perpetrators of this. Like how do we as a country and a church work so that the number 1 in 4 or 1 in 2 isn't that way anymore for our daughters?
My husband and I are church planters. And so we have a church here in West Chicago. And I think what I would love to see personally is more and more churches creating cultures of safe disclosure so that victims of sexual abuse and sexual assault, physical abuse, physical assault, emotional abuse, emotional assault, spiritual abuse, and, you know, any kind that's out there, that there are safe places where victims can come forward and say, this has been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's part of it. Again, we keep talking about this, but shame wants to keep you in silence, keep you in the darkness, because it breeds and grows there. But if we can create places where people feel safe to say, this is my story, and then people know how to respond too. Because I think sometimes the hard thing is some people have spoken out, but then their story has been received negatively, or they've been blamed, or they've been silenced, you know, don't talk about this. And so we have to teach people both how to respond and how to create a safe place so victims can come forward and start sharing their stories. And it's not overlooked anymore. You know, we do something about it. Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things we talked about in our podcast, was just like, we have to start believing people who say this happens. That feels like number one, you know, because it's so true that when this stuff happens and then everyone blames the victim instead of believes, then it encourages that silence. It really is like a poison for a slow poison, right? For anyone who has been a victim. Once you see that on kind of any sort of community stage or national stage, like it just, of course, you don't want any part of that. You're going to be thrown back into silence.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes back to promoting that rape culture, right? That like, I'm so mad about this. Sometimes I can't even get the words out.
Yeah.
But yeah, we blame the victim, or we don't believe the victim, because assuming it's man and woman, a lot of times it's the man has a certain status in society, or he's well respected, or this or that. And so we just think absolutely not. Or, you know, I hear stories after stories of it's a leader in a church, and so you don't want to mar that leader's reputation. So maybe the story is believed, but the church asks women to just keep it silent so it doesn't sort of ruin the reputation of the church. And at some point, caring for the vulnerable has to become more important than protecting the perpetrator and protecting the reputation. You know?
Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. Caring for the there victim. It is.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you have a sick kid, which really sucks, because I got, like, you know, another hour of questions. We could just keep talking.
We got to change the world, ladies.
So true. Well, thank you so much, Aubrey, for being our guest today and for just talking to us about your experience and the love that you leave behind everywhere you go. It's inspiring. Where can our listeners who want to learn more about you and your message, where can they find you?
Thank you, by the way, so much for having me. I've loved chatting with you ladies. So I have a website, aubreysamson.com. You can find me there. I travel around the country speaking to groups about this topic, and I love connecting with listeners and with readers. So please connect with me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at aubsamp, AUBSAMP. I have a Facebook author page, Aubrey Samson, and Overcomers available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, christianbooks.com. So, yeah, connect with the book, connect with me. I will respond to you if you send me messages. But, yeah, I just love talking about this issue with women and hopefully helping them feeling validated and empowered.
Well, I think your message definitely comes through, both in your writing and just in the time that you spoke with us today. So thank you so much. This was terrific.
Thank you.
Mama Bears, do you struggle with shame? Do you find yourself saying things to yourself in the mirror or as you move about the day that don't honor the beautiful being that you are? Do you struggle with self-love or self-care? We hear you. So many of us do. But today, we dare you to examine these parts of you. Examine the way you speak to yourself. We dare you to poke holes at these feelings of not being enough and ask yourself where these ideas come from. Say something good about yourself, Mama Bear, because there are so many good things. We dare you to become aware of the negative messages that you are internalizing and shine a light on them. We're stronger than these lies, and we can overcome. It's an uphill battle in this culture that we exist in, but we are for freedom and for authenticity and for lives of love and respect for ourselves. This freedom to be fully you comes with some examination and talking and analyzing and, as Aubrey says, overcoming. We know you're up for it. We dare you to simply start the process, find the lies, face them straight on. We dare you to speak beautiful and loving truths to yourself. It might feel silly, but do it anyway. Mama Bears, your worth is enormous. It's huge. It's undeniable. And we know that the stronger you become and the more sure you are of your value in this world, the more your light will shine onto those around you. Let it shine, Mama Bears. Recognize your truth and let it shine.
Tattoo it on your body. You need to.
Tape it to the mirror. Whatever you
That's right.
Do.
Sometimes we need practical, right? I just thought this conversation was so good. That dare was the perfect ending. Thank you for that, sister. You guys, tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. We had a whole episode about that. Make sure you check that out from last Wednesday. But Giving Tuesday is such an awesome way to engage your mama bear and buy things with justice in
That's
mind.
Right.
So buy your bracelets, buy your coal, all the good and lovely things. We got such a great list on our website. So check those out if you have questions. MamaBearDaresPodcast.com is where you'll find us. Make sure you find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We have amazing conversations with listeners that are just like you. I know if you're like me, like I've heard my other podcast people say this, or my favorite authors, like, I want to hear from you. I want to talk to you. And I'm like, no, you really don't. They do. It's true. They do. It's so incredible to, you know, we had a fundraiser and it was fun to meet some of our listeners mm-hmm. who I hadn't met before and just be able to see that, like, we are so alike in so many ways. So you guys, we would love to hear from you. Find us on any of those social media channels or email us mamabeardares@gmail.com, especially if you have someone who is just incredible in your life, who you think the greater world needs to hear about, because we love meeting new people, just like Aubrey. Aubrey's a friend now, but we didn't know her before.
I know.
So,
but soon we're gonna show up at her door. We're gonna give her a great big hug.
That's right. Look forward to that, Aubrey. You guys, thank you so much for coming with us again on another episode of the Mama Bear Dares podcast. We will be back here on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday.